Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Today's show is our annual Homeland Security Emergency Management Show, and we'll be joined by the Minnesota National Guard, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Every year, March is designated Women's History Month by presidential proclamation. In celebration of this, I'd like to remember the contributions of women veterans throughout history. Even before the Declaration of Independence was signed, women were serving as nurses and cooks at military camps in support of the Revolutionary War. Their invaluable contributions spanned the preservation of the Union and two world wars. Despite nearly two centuries of service, it wasn't until 1948 that women were allowed to become permanent members of the military. Having the honor of volunteering to serve was just the beginning. Women service members spent the next seven decades overcoming obstacles and breaking down barriers. During Korea and Vietnam, they deployed to four combat zones and aboard ships. In 1976, they were admitted to four of the five service academies. And by 1993, women pilots were flying combat missions. Finally, in 2016, the Department of Defense opened all combat jobs to women service members. To all of our female veterans and those currently serving, thank you for your leadership, your service, and commitment to our nation. Please join me in honoring these extraordinary women, past and present, as we celebrate Women's History Month.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the opening, this is our annual Homeland Security Emergency Management Show, which is when we bring in Director Joe Kelly from the Homeland Security Emergency Management, which is part of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. He's a retired Brigadier General, spent many years with the Minnesota National Guard, and welcome back to the show, sir.
Well, hello, Tom. It's great to be back. It's hard to believe another year has passed since the last time we talked about, you know, emergency preparedness and those kinds of things. Been a heck of a year. It was a fast year, but it was also one of the longest years. So good to be with you again.
Sir, that year passed quickly, and of course it was full of pandemic. And as I understand it, you may have spent most of that year, if not all of it, in your emergency operations center.
It certainly feels like I have spent all of it in the State Emergency Operations Center, which is currently in downtown St. Paul, with plans to build a new facility and move somewhere else. But it has been. We are approaching on December 15th. We will be at the 1 year mark, 365 continuous days of activation of the State Emergency Operations Center. Of course, that was all triggered by the beginning of the global pandemic and the response to COVID-19. But then it also turned into some activations for some natural disasters. Thankfully, most of those were relatively minor, if there is such a thing. And then, of course, we had some civil unrest here in the metro area as well. So it's been a heck of a year, and this is a record for the amount of time our EOC has been activated, and it's broke the other record by such a wide margin we can't even remember what it used to be. So clearly a historic year in many, many ways across our great state and across the country.
Sir, I hope we get back to some type of normal soon. And for our listeners that might not be familiar with Homeland Security Emergency Management, when you don't have a pandemic to deal with and you don't have any civil unrest and riots going on, what's the purpose of the Minnesota's Homeland Security Emergency Management? What type of things do you train for and prepare for?
That's a good question, Tom. I appreciate the opportunity to explain it because we have got a little tunnel vision with this year. But our mission statement is to prepare for, respond to, and recover to all nature of emergencies and disasters. And certainly, of course, we got a human health pandemic we're dealing with now, but typically we deal with flooding, wildfires, tornadoes, ice storms, those kinds of things. So we spend a lot of time on preparedness, which involves writing emergency response plans and training people to know what to do when something bad happens. Of course, in response, we do that here from the State Emergency Operations Center, where the state provides the resources that local communities need. And usually in recovery, it's helping make organizations, jurisdictions financially whole. So for a lot of folks, because sometimes our name is a little confusing to people because of the Homeland Security component of our mission, But if you're looking for a parallel in the federal government for what we do, it's FEMA. FEMA is the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and we are the state's emergency management agency. We handle all those kinds of emergencies and disasters, as well as some homeland security responsibilities. But a lot of times we play, we prepare, and we spend our time and energy getting ready. We have spent the entire year in response and recovery simultaneously. So that's kind of what we do in a nutshell, Tom.
We're speaking with Director Joe Kelly from Minnesota's Homeland Security Emergency Management on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, I know in normal years you spend some time with the people that sit in your chair from other states, where you compare notes and you try to prepare things. And also, Homeland Security Emergency Management has a facility up on Camp Ripley. And when we're not in a pandemic, you're up there helping train troops. You're up there developing relationships with people to prepare for these emergencies. Can you tell us, absent a pandemic, how that usually works with other states and with the training at Camp Ripley?
Yeah, the one of the core tenets of this business that I'm in is that relationships matter. And we develop those relationships through our training programs, through meetings and conferences where we share information, both at the state level and interstate, and in fact, you know, across the country. What's been challenging this year is that we're just not, because of the pandemic, we're not able to get together. So we do a lot of things the way we're doing this interview, which is through a computer connection. But we've had all manner of meetings, conferences, and exercises that have either been done remotely or in a lot of cases suspended. And it's a little bit painful for me that we've had to suspend our normal training program, where we train local city and county and tribal nation emergency managers. We kind of had to put that on hold as we go through the process of figuring out how do we do that, one, in the pandemic world, and how do we do it post-pandemic. That we'll have some catching up to do, not only on training and exercising, but also just on good old-fashioned relationships and making human contacts and connections.
Sir, you mentioned earlier that you spent a lot of time in the State Emergency Operations Center, which is downtown St. Paul. And last time we talked about the fact that the state legislature has allocated you some money to build a new one. How's that going, sir?
It's going well, Tom. And again, thank you to the legislature and to Governor Walz for including this project in the bonding package that was approved. I think it was back in October. We were allocated about $29.5 million to build a new facility. It's going well. We're in our final negotiations for a piece of property, looking at about 10 or 12 acres of land in the North Metro, and we have weekly meetings with our architect and design firm as they go through and help us clearly articulate our requirements and then work on some of the design specifications, wants, needs, and requirements. So it's going well. It's going fast, and we're really excited about that. Minnesota is a state that has a frequency of emergencies and disasters that is surprising to most people. And we need a world-class facility to do that from, because we are a one-of-a-kind facility that supports the entire state, all of our cities, counties, and tribal nations. And that facility and my staff needs to be there when they call for help. So we're really excited to build our way out of the shortcomings we've lived with for many, many years here.
And Director Kelly, a few years back, you completed the construction of a Homeland Security Emergency Management building up on Camp Ripley. So having been through that, this is the second one that you're coming through, and that must make it just a little bit easier.
It does make it a little bit easier. The scale of the two things is what's most dramatic with that. But it is. We're familiar with the construction process. Of course, the last time it was a little bit easier. We didn't have quite as big a lift because our great partners in the Minnesota National Guard and the facility management team up at Camp Ripley did a lot of the project management for us. But there certainly are some lessons learned. And we're not using that facility that much for training this year because of the pandemic, but we are using it as an auxiliary operations center as we work our way through the, all the events of this year. So just like they were when they helped us build that thing, at that facility at Camp Ripley, the Guard is continues to be our one of our biggest and most important partners.
And, sir, we're going to talk to them in the next segment. One last question in this segment. Any idea when you might break ground, and what's the projected timetable for completion of the new Homeland Security State Emergency Operations Center?
Yeah, I'm going to work backwards from that right now, and I'll answer the last part of the question first, Tom. We're looking at the May of 2023, so about 2 years from now. I'm hoping we will break ground probably at the very beginning of the 2022 construction season. So, but we're already planning the ribbon cutting for May of 2023. So it's a long process, as you can imagine.
We'll pencil that in the calendar, sir. We have to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to the Minnesota National Guard about their relationship with Homeland Security and Emergency Management. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with my co-host, Director Joe Kelly from Minnesota's Homeland Security Emergency Management, which is part of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. And, of course, in normal years, that's pretty busy over there dealing with the floods and all kinds of natural disasters and storms and so forth. But what we want to talk about in this segment, Director Kelly, is you've got a lot of partnerships around the state, and one of the most important partnerships is the Minnesota National Guard. And joining us now is Sergeant Major Jason Rost, who serves as the Operations Sergeant Major for the Minnesota National Guard, where he advises on organizational operations and training to include resource management, individual training, collective training, domestic operations, and mobilization readiness. And General Kelly, before you retired, did this Sergeant Major ever work for you when you were back in the Guard?
Well, I believe he did, Tom. Once upon a time, one of my favorite assignments in the National Guard was as the commander of the first of 34th Brigade. So, I don't remember him as well as I should of the thousands of soldiers it was my pleasure to serve with. But as I see him, I recall just how much we should all be grateful for the service of the young men and women of the Minnesota National Guard to step forward and continue to follow the leaders that we put up next. So, pleasure to see you again, Sergeant Major.
Thank you very much, General. Appreciate it.
And Sergeant Major Rost, it's funny how these things go. You worked together when he was in the Guard, and then he retired from there and went over to Homeland Security, and before you know it, he's the Director of Homeland Security. And you're right back working with them again. That must be kind of fun.
That's right. Yes, sir. It certainly is.
I think I'm kind of like the National Guard's bad penny, Tom. I just keep showing up.
Sir, I prefer to think that all those years in the Guard and your familiarity with Camp Ripley and how the Guard works gives you an advantage that anybody else in your position might not have. But I want to ask the Sergeant Major, you know, Homeland Security is pretty important these days, and probably the biggest partnership that Joe Kelly has is with the Minnesota National Guard. How important is that to the Guard, Sergeant Major?
You know, that relationship is really critical to the Minnesota Army National Guard. It allows us to be one of the special tools in the emergency manager's toolbox, where we can bring some incredible types of resources to help assist our state and the emergency manager deal with crises for all of the citizens of this state.
Very good, Sergeant Major. And General Kelly, I want to ask you, can you tell us about the process? If there's a tornado in southern Minnesota, if there's a blizzard going on in down across I-90, or if there's a flood going on up in the Red River Valley and local authorities need some help, how do they go about getting the help from you, and how do you go about getting help from your partners such as the Minnesota National Guard?
No, thanks, Tom. That's a great question. Anytime for any type of an incident when a local jurisdiction needs assistance from the state, doesn't matter what it is. That could be help from the Department of Transportation or the Department of Health or the National Guard. They call the State Emergency Operations Center. And we validate the mission. We always have somebody from the National Guard here in our Emergency Operations Center or on the other end of a phone to help us vet those requests to make sure they're appropriate for the National Guard to do. But then there's that extra step, and that step is that for the National Guard to be put onto the field, if you will, to be put on the state service, we need to have the orders of the governor of the state of Minnesota. So we go through an emergency executive order writing process that involves the governor and his staff, and of course with consultation with the adjutant general. So there's another step in that process, but I can tell you it's worth that step because the capability that the Guard has is incredible for us.
Sergeant Major, I think our listeners, when they think about the Minnesota National Guard, are thinking about the federal missions where we deploy troops overseas, such as the 135 over in the Horn of Africa, coming home real soon. But on these state missions, the Guard has a federal mission and the state active duty mission. If we get a request that goes through the Homeland Security and the governor approves it, comes down to the Guard, can you tell us, how do you choose which troops to call up and what's the process for getting them there on time?
Sure, certainly. Well, we have a really unique state and organization within Minnesota that allows us to have multiple and several different types of soldiers in our state, along with or consisting of soldiers such as the National Guard Quick Reaction Force, which allows us to respond to domestic emergencies in a rapid fashion. And those soldiers are firefighters, they're medics. We also have general soldiers who are able to go out and help emergency managers with things like floods and severe weather, storm response. And finally, we also have soldiers that sustain all of those operations, so that can help provide a logistics backbone to the emergency managers out there. The selection process for that really is dependent on the mission, Tom. When we have things like firefights, you know, we have aviation assets that we can bring to the fight. And when we have things like severe weather and winter storms, we have people who have tracked vehicle licenses that can go out and serve in an inclement weather environment.
And Sergeant Major, it's my understanding that the last year since the pandemic started, with that and the civil unrest and the normal disasters, Minnesota National Guard has probably got more man days in the last year than maybe they've ever had. How's that playing out, and how are your troops? I know they're resilient, but I know they like going on the state missions so that they can help their neighbors and friends.
You know, you are exactly, you hit it right on the head there, Tom. I just had an opportunity today, actually, to talk to one of the soldiers that we have supporting our COVID missions outside of in the state, and they have greatly enjoyed the opportunity to serve our community. While we have exceeded the number of days that we have previously served in any given calendar year, our soldiers are motivated to be out there amongst the counties and cities that they live in and helping serve the people of the state of Minnesota.
Director Kelly, it seems to me in the last year that you've had to call on the Minnesota National Guard more frequently than ever with the normal natural disasters and the civil unrest and the COVID and moving supplies around and giving shots and helping in the nursing homes. You must feel like you were back in the Guard, sir.
It does feel like that, and I would just say to what Sergeant Major said, you know, we try very carefully to place orders for capability. You know, here's what we need, and we let them figure out who and what units. But they have done just about everything that you can imagine being asked for, from helping transport personal protective equipment. And we went through, and I know it's one of our guests later on, with the Corps of Engineers to design some alternate care sites in case our hospitals overflowed, and their planners were a big part of that. You know, a tremendous effort where they took more than 300 soldiers and taught them how to be nursing assistants to go in and take care of our elderly in the skilled nursing facilities, and now helping out with vaccination clinics. I don't know. I've been associated with the Guard and its support to civil authorities for, boy, going on 30 years, and I have never seen a year like this. And Sergeant Major, at the end of this all, you're going to have to send me a number that says since March 15th, 2020, how many soldiers and airmen, how many duty days they put in. Because I don't even know how to hazard a guess. It is off the charts, another record-breaking year. So there are just some things I don't know what we would do without the National Guard, honestly. You know, there's a lot of capability. A lot of people can do stuff. But how quickly they can move, how well organized they are, how self-sustaining they are, and then at the bottom, how effective they are is absolutely astounding. So we're grateful that Minnesota has the National Guard is strong and competent and well-led, both at the NCO level and at the officer level as we have here in Minnesota, and some great young people working for them.
Sergeant Major, how do you train all your troops for all that variety of things you've had to do in the last year? And are you ready for another year? 2021 is here. I hope the next year is going to be a little easier than the last one.
Yes, I certainly do as well, Tom. You know, the training of our troops is a complex task, but it's one that we endeavor to get better at every day. We have so many soldiers out there, and what we look to do is really try to give them the skills and experience necessary to be ready to respond to both their federal and their domestic missions. I think that we have done the best we can to prepare our soldiers to be successful this year. We do not know what 2021 holds before us the rest of this year, but we certainly know that we want to live up to the motto of our organization and be always ready.
Always ready, Sergeant Major. And something tells me that Director Kelly's got another surprise in his pocket for the next year, and you're going to have to respond to it. So always ready is a great way to go. Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us today. And Director Kelly, in the next segment, we're going to talk to another one of your great partners, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been joined today by my co-host, which is Director Joe Kelly from Homeland Security and Emergency Management, which is part of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. And this is our annual show where we usually talk about things such as floods and projections of what's coming up and how you deal with fires and those type of things. And in the past year, of course, we've heard today that they've been occupied with the pandemic, with Director Kelly's pandemic of the last year, and hopefully we're going to work our way through that, and we're going to talk about that in the fourth segment. Sir, another one of your close partners is the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and joining us now is Phil White, who is the Chief of Readiness and Operations for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District. White and his team oversee emergency operations in the district and personnel supporting national emergencies, and he's a retired Master Sergeant in the Army Reserve. And Phil, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Director Kelly, another one of your great partners, especially in normal spring times, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. We usually, seems like last year the melt wasn't too bad, but we had some rains in southern Minnesota, had some floods, and at this part of the show, and with Phil with us, what are you expecting this year from the recent melt? And of course, we had some rains in the Twin Cities.
Well, the good news, Tom, is I think we're in a better spot than we were a year ago when we look at the flood forecast by a lot. You know, soil moisture across most of Minnesota is pretty normal. Snowpack, well, in the southern two-thirds of the state, that's just gone. And we have had a little rain. But right now, it looks like without a major precipitation event, we're going to have a pretty easy year when it comes to major riverine flooding. Doesn't mean that we're not, you know, potentially teed up for some strong storms. We did experience some of that this week with some snowstorm in the north and some tornadoes in the south and everything else in between. So, but right now the flood forecast is pretty good, at least compared to the last couple of years.
Very good, sir. And Phil, can you tell us the sort of things that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District is looking at this time of year? What type of things are you worried about? What type of things are you watching closely?
Absolutely. You know, we work in great partnership with the National Weather Service and the National River Forecast Center, as well as Director Kelly's staff with the flood forecasting. And so today we just received our third installment of the National Weather Service flood outlook, and just to reiterate what Mr. Kelly said is, you know, the current river levels are near normal or decreasing. Soil moisture is very low, which means there's a very low threat. We didn't have a lot, a little bit below normal winter precip, and snowpack equivalency, or what we call SWE, snow water equivalency, is really below normal, and that's a big one. And then frost depth, we're near normal or below. So, I mean, I think we're in really good shape this year, obviously. You know, the last leg of that table that we have to worry about is spring precipitation, and that's even looking a little bit forecasted looking better than normal in previous years. So, knock on wood, it's a good year so far, sir.
And, Phil, a lot of years, when we look back over the last 10 or 20 years, we're hearing about the Red River Valley up by Fargo and north of there. And I know there's been a lot of remediation efforts up there. How does that look up in that territory for this year?
Well, it looks really good. You know, parts of North Dakota and western Minnesota are in near drought conditions. And with the current spring precipitation forecast, that may continue. And then with the flood mitigation projects, our partners with the states up there, both Minnesota and North Dakota, has really changed the levels of protection for those communities along the Red River. So, I mean, another one of those things, we're waiting on spring precip, but it really looks really well. And I think our partnerships with both states have really increased the level of protection for those communities.
Director Kelly, we heard in the last segment how the Minnesota National Guard is such a great and important partner, but to have a partnership like this with the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and, of course, they're close with the National Weather Service, you've really got a deep well of resources there to call on and a great partner with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Well, we do, Tom, and we've got some great friends and some great partners, and the Army Corps of Engineers is certainly counted among those first and foremost when we start talking about flooding. But it is interesting that earlier, about a year ago, we also started working with their engineering staff, as I mentioned in the previous segment, relying on them to help us evaluate facilities around the state to figure out where could we set up what we called alternate care sites, which would be places for hospitals to overflow into. And it was a huge effort. And it's what Phil said, and that's just the federal government using its resources however they can be in order to meet the needs of the state. So that was a great effort. I knock on wood almost every day. Thankfully, we've never had to use the one facility that we built and kitted out. But again, you know, multi-talented friend in the Corps of Engineers for all sorts of things. And we saw both natural disasters and then the human health pandemic response this year. There they were for us, like they always are.
We're speaking with Joe Kelly and Phil White on our annual emergency preparedness on Minnesota Military Radio. And Phil, I want to ask you about that. Director Kelly brought up alternative care sites. When the pandemic first hit and the hospitals were being overflowed, we saw in the news almost every day that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers almost overnight was setting up emergency medical centers to help with the overflow of patients. That had to be quite a project and one that the Army Corps of Engineers did over and over again early on this pandemic.
Yeah, on a national level, we were tasked by FEMA under the National Response Framework as the nation's engineers. So if you look at the National Response Framework, we have Emergency Service Function 3, which is engineering and civil work. So one of the things we can bring in the fight is that really, really good engineering expertise to assist states and locals with these type of things. For the state of Minnesota, we did over 48 assessments of facilities that would meet the requirement of the state for alternate care facilities. We also assisted the states of Wisconsin and North Dakota the same. So it really is tagged into the partnership that starts at the local level, and then we're kind of the intermediary between the states, and we respond to requests from the states, and we work for FEMA to execute that key engineering expertise.
Director Kelly, that's got to be a great partnership there. But the other part of that, I remember you were looking at facilities, but you were always, during the first part of the pandemic, keeping track of resources, supplies. We needed beds, we needed masks, we needed all kinds of things. And that was another part of, did that come under your jurisdiction, or was everyone looking for supplies? I know you had the Minnesota National Guard moving some of it around.
One of the things we did, Tom, was we assembled a work group here in the State Emergency Operations Center called the Critical Care Supplies. And they were kind of our hunters, gatherers, finders for all manner of things that were needed, everything from ventilators to N95 respirators to, in the case of the alternate care site that we've been talking about with Phil, hospital beds and other ancillary equipment that are used in a care center. And it was weird because everybody in the country needed this stuff at the same time. You know, the nation has what they call the strategic national stockpile for public health emergencies, and it's got a lot of stuff in it. all manner of medical equipment and supplies, but it was never scaled to have 50 states and our territories simultaneously need and draw on that at the same time. So I think one of the lessons learned is we can't ever be in that scramble mode again. Every state, I think, is going to assemble some kind of a state stockpile of those critical things and work with our healthcare systems to rotate them, because we don't ever want to get caught where we're scrambling and worse, competing with each other to get the things we needed to help take care of our citizens.
Phil, all your folks at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District had to feel pretty good about their efforts to help with the pandemic and their efforts to help Director Kelly to pull together and take care of the people here in Minnesota. It had to be rewarding.
Yeah, one thing about working for whether state or federal organizations is there's always a high level of service with the employees of each organization. And you go to college for a certain skill set and you come to work for one of our organizations. But really the thing that makes our people special is they really believe in service to others, right? And so I think it always is a great opportunity when you can actually execute that. It's really rewarding for our employees and they really enjoy the work. So it really gives me a large pool of individuals to pull from when I get requests from people like Director Kelly to assist.
Phil, keep up the good work, and thanks for joining us today. And Director Kelly, when we come back, you've got another great partnership with the Minneapolis VA healthcare system, and we're going to have Director Pat Kelly join us when we come back. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host today has been Director Joe Kelly from the Homeland Security and Emergency Management, which is part of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. And Joe Kelly, we've talked today about the overall of the Homeland Security and what your mission is, your partnerships with the Minnesota National Guard, your partnership with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and of course, here in Minnesota, we work closely together with a lot of agencies. And our guest joining us this segment is Director Pat Kelly, who is the director of the Minneapolis VA Healthcare Center. And so I don't confuse our listeners today. If you two gentlemen don't mind, I'll refer to you as Joe and Pat. And you can punish me for that later, General and Captain. So, Pat, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Always great to be with you. And it's what an important show today. I'm glad you had the opportunity to work me in. I'm interested in not only hearing more about what we're doing. General Kelly and his group have done a terrific job this year, and I think there's a ways to go. And I'm glad you gave me an opportunity to talk about that a little bit.
Thanks, sir. Thank you, sir. And General Joe, you've been locked up in that emergency management center for most of the year, and it's been quite a year, and it is a year now. When the pandemic came up, and it grew fast, and we had to get supplies, we had to get people. Can you just walk us quickly through that year and how COVID has so harshly impacted all our lives?
Well, it has certainly impacted every life in Minnesota and across the country and really around the world. That's why that's why this was designated as a pandemic a year ago. But it not only tested our healthcare system and our ability to respond to protect people by providing personal protective equipment and ventilators, and then later on tests. We didn't have a testing program for a public health challenge like the coronavirus, and at its height, we were doing 75,000-80,000 tests a day. Now we're doing vaccination on a scale that we probably haven't seen for at least a generation, if not ever. And all the while, the challenges have been, the focus has been prevent the uncontrolled spread of the virus and protect our healthcare system, because those are the folks, the people that work with Pat every day, at least not for, and he focuses, of course, on our veterans, but it's those healthcare professionals that are going to save people's lives. I'm in the emergency and disaster business, and we talk all the time about all hazards, and usually that, we think about tornadoes, floods, et cetera, but certainly human health disasters and pandemics are on there. I didn't think I'd ever be involved in one. But here we are, and I can tell you we've learned a lot, not just about how to deal with a health crisis, but how to manage a massive disaster that has monumental impact on our society. So there's a generation of people in all of our professions that are going to be better prepared the next time something bad happens, no matter what it is.
General Joe, we're lucky here in Minnesota. We've got one of the best VA healthcare systems in the nation, and you've got a great partner down over in Minneapolis with Pat Kelly and the Minneapolis VA healthcare system.
We do, and like so many of our federal partners, they were there when we needed them. I talked about protecting the healthcare system earlier, and some of that is protecting it and keeping it from being overcome by the caseload. And we worked with Pat and his hospital over there to reserve, if you will, some bed capacity for that ever-critical intensive care unit capability. So they were there when we needed them. Fortunately, we didn't have to send very many patients over there, but we sent a couple. His partners in the U.S. Public Health Service were also instrumental in sending us some nurses. And I can't remember, Pat, if we got some VA nurses, we might have, that came and helped out in the long-term care settings.
Yes.
The long-term care centers, many of them were overwhelmed. Their staff got sick. The residents got sick. And we needed healthcare professionals, and the federal government and its health services were there for us. So those are some of the darkest days that I recall over the last year, is how are we going to get help to take care of our elders? So thanks for that, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
And Director Pat Kelly,
there was a time when we got started where there were some pretty dark days, right, Joe? I mean, I think, you know, and I give a lot of credit to people who have been in this fight for the last year, healthcare workers, essential personnel, you know, while at the same time they're experiencing some pretty difficult challenges at work. Everybody was dealing with school and spousal issues, jobs. You know, it was a challenging year, and people rose to the occasion, and I'm hoping we're on the backside of this, but it is clearly not over, but I think some of the darker days maybe are behind us now that we're getting vaccinated throughout our state, and it's encouraging, and it feels good that we've made this kind of progress, and I think everybody in the state of Minnesota and I think in the VA can really be proud of what has happened in terms of our effort in the last year.
You're listening to our annual Emergency Management and Preparedness Show on Minnesota Military Radio. Excuse me, Joe, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, Tom. I think springtime helps, too. I mean, there's a natural cycle to viruses, seasonal variability, if you will, plus there's just some emotional salve that comes with the end of winter. So I think that and the vaccines, everything seems to be coming together, plus our healthcare systems are in a much better place than they were from staffing and outfitting and supplies than they were a year ago. So I agree with Pat. You know, we've made a lot of progress. I do think we can see the end from here. We just got to get there.
And Director Pat, there was an update last night. You've got some vaccines you're giving out in the Hibbing Clinic and the Ely Clinic this weekend. Eligible veterans are 65 years and over, and May 20th, you're going to be at the Chippewa Valley Clinic, and March 20th and March 21st, you're going to be at the Rice Lake VA Clinic. And I would say, sir, I was out to the Minneapolis Medical Center last Friday to get my first shot, being an old Vietnam veteran. It was well organized, and your people were just fantastic.
Thanks, Tom. You know, we do vaccine clinics every day, to include every weekend day, and in our community-based clinics. This weekend, for example, where you mentioned several, we're going to be in three of our community-based clinics around the state. You know, we've got about we're thinking maybe about 70,000-75,000 veterans who will get their vaccine through us. Many of them, we're finding, fortunately, are getting them through the state's terrific response. You know, so we're calling veterans and learning that, you know, they've had an opportunity in their community. And by all means, we've encouraged them to take advantage of that opportunity and get the vaccine where they can get it and when they can get it. But, yeah, it's an everyday effort, and we're going to be going at it probably for a couple of more months. But I am encouraged. You know, a lot of veterans are accepting of the vaccine. We've done about 90% of our staff, so I think you know, again, that's going to make a difference, and it's already starting to make a difference.
Director Pat, one last question. It seems to me that once we get most of our people with the vaccines, is there a danger that people think it's over? Can this come back and bite us if they go out and try to be too normal?
Well, you know, I'm not as eloquent as Dr. Anthony Fauci, but I will say anybody who's watching TV realizes that you know, there's still a danger of what's going on. I think people should still do what they have done with some new relief that the CDC has given out with respect to those that have been vaccinated. You know, now joining in smaller groups and sort of limited travel. But, you know, all of those things, the mask wearing, the social distancing, the screening, we are still doing all of those things at the medical center because that's how you keep people safe. And so we are seeing an end coming. We are not at the end. And so we are encouraging our veterans and our staff, keep doing what you're doing. Let's get this vaccination out more broadly. And then we'll be looking at opportunity maybe to do some of the things we were more accustomed to. But let's see it through to the end. We're getting close.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for joining us today. This is Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. And General Joe, feels like we're getting to the end, but it also feels like we got to be careful.
I agree. I agree with everything Pat said about those basics, you know, about blocking and tackling. If you're washing your hands, you know, wearing a mask, get vaccinated when you can, stay socially distanced. But, you know, I'm not a big person for military combat metaphors when that's not what we're doing, but we are doing that in the case of the virus. We are fighting a virus that hurts people and kills people, and we've made tremendous progress. I would say we're winning, but just like in, you know, combat operations, when you start winning, you don't let up. You finish the enemy off. You push it all the way to the end. You get all the way to the objective before you let your guard down, because you would sure hate to fall short. The impact this had on our society, the prices that have been paid, we cannot go backwards. We cannot give up the gains that Minnesotans have worked so hard for, staying home with their kids, closing their businesses, being isolated from their friends. So let's finish this thing strong.
Thank you, sir, and I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule there at the Emergency Management Center to join us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
We have one mention today. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs expects funding for the COVID-19 financial relief grants to be exhausted very soon. So if you're still interested, please reach out to your county veteran service officer now if you've been financially impacted by the pandemic. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Sergeant Major Jason Rost from the Minnesota National Guard, Phil White from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and my co-host, Director Joe Kelly from the Minnesota Homeland Security Emergency Management, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk about a new way to honor airmen of the Minnesota National Guard and meet Minnesota's Sons of the American Legion. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.